Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And he's just sort of raising his hand and punching another passenger.
For any particular reason.
Like that dude with the shoe at Bush that time?
Well, we'll get to that in a second. Another witness told Fox 5 the naked man then exited the train at DuPont where he did naked calisthenics on the platform.
Okay, so he's in shape.
Push-ups and jumping jacks.
Sure.
Officials remarked that the man may, and I repeat, may have been on some kind of drug at the time of the early morning incident.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Reset the board there.
What are we doing? What happened? Don't worry about it. Let's just start the show. That's just another mistake.
Another mistake.
Michael, what are those shirts? Morning.
Reset the board to zero.
Yeah, I sell those.
Reset the board to zero. We're live at Chatter. Big crowd today on a Friday. Thanks, everybody, for coming in. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest in Friendship Heights. I gave a plug last night on the PTI show. It turned out that Bill Murray and his brothers are opening up a restaurant in Chicago called Murray Brothers Caddyshack. And I said on the air, as the proud owner of Chatter in Washington, D.C., I wish Bill Murray would call me so I could give him some tips about how to avoid the pitfalls of owning a restaurant, such as owning a restaurant, which I thought was a funny line. Gary Braun is with us. Gene McManus is with us. Michael Kornheiser, on the last day of his 31st year on Earth, with us. Nigel will run the board. Nigel will do the news. I want to get to some of the letters that we've gotten. Nigel is fixing my microphone. Jolene Wojcik, who does this all the time, who's very, very nice from Grand Island, Nebraska, says, I'm very happy you and Michael were able to get to Augusta, but I wish it would have been later in the week so we could have enjoyed a pimento cheese sandwich together. Although you probably showered everyone with Master's gifts already, I've enclosed a few items. Please make sure Gary and Nigel each get a ball marker as a belated birthday gift. I know David doesn't play golf.
Thank you, Jimmy.
But he gets one, too. The Pro V's are for you, which I gave to Michael. And, of course, the Masters Sippy Cup goes to Little Walker, although I don't think he's quite ready for it. And, you know, she says one of the best things about the Masters, it's one of the last sporting events where a regular person can get the best seats. All you have to do is get up early and then, of course, walk very fast. We're in line at 6 in the morning each day, 5 on Sunday, along with a bunch of regulars who have badges. The four of us gals from Nebraska who head to the front row on 18 green. Oliver from New York who sits by us and drives home after the Saturday round and arrives just in time to watch leaders tee off. Mark and his friend from Charlotte who go to 16 tee and just call us all Nebraska. The beautiful Sue Ann, not Sue Ann Nivens necessarily, from Austin, and her sister and mom who sit on 9 green and go home after everyone goes through. And finally, the two guys who bring coffee and Krispy Kreme donuts for all of us each morning.
So nice.
It's like a club. Since we don't have our phones, you cannot have phones, which is great. We don't take photos, don't exchange numbers, don't follow each other on social media. We really don't know last names. We just see each other every April for 4 days, and we're blessed to watch the best in the world at what they do.
Although I don't understand. If she is sitting front row at the 18th green, how come we heard nary a la cheeserie?
Because you can get tossed. I think you can get tossed.
So there's a photo that the official Masters social app shared, and she is visible in the front row wearing a red visor right behind
Tiger. Isn't that great? That's great. Chris Scagnelli writes, in 2015, my girlfriend Lauren Herman and I took a journey down to Washington, D.C. We managed to meet you and the gang at the radio station. Absolutely surreal. Talk about a David Aldridge moment. After trading stories and taking pictures, you generously invited us to the set of PTI later that day. Although you caution others against meeting their idols, I found you to be the real deal. The whole experience was one of the best days I ever had. Jump ahead a few years, now Lauren and I are getting married. We're extending an invitation to you and the entire podcast crew to attend our wedding. Michael can even bring baby boy Bootsy. Ceremony begins 3 o'clock in the afternoon at Alexandria's in Oswego, New York. That's upstate New York. On Sunday, May 27th, might be snowing at that point. Reception to follow immediately. Plenty of food and alcohol to consume. Neither Liz nor Saliza will need a reminder to eat it. So anyway, so this is very, very nice. Tell Michael it's April and still snowing in central New York. So that's nice. That's very nice. We appreciate that. We got a conch shell. We got a hat. Gary, the hat is from Skipper's Pier, which is in Deal, Maryland.
I think that's right. Yes, yeah. I think that's Deal, Maryland.
Got a long
Maryland.
Letter from a guy with a great name.
Julian Ralph Easterday III.
Who writes?
Easterday.
Who writes? Like, you want me to read this volume?
Read some of it. He sent us a conch shell.
Back a couple of months ago, you mentioned the blowing of a conch shell.
It weighs almost as much as like an Emmy weighs. This is heavy.
So, you know, you tried earlier.
For those who want a reference point.
Just a drop.
For those of you who've won Emmys.
So put it in the bathroom.
So Tony, earlier in the day, attempted to blow into the conch shell, but he blew into the part you would typically put up to your ears.
Because I don't know how to do that. Because it's not a shofar. That's one. Go ahead. Oh, look at Gary.
Yeah.
Gary making it work.
Assemble Good news job. Team. Yeah. Assemble so news go. Team.
Okay.
So they sent us
Duck and cover. Conch and cover.
So what did he send us?
What's so he the letter? Sent you the conch. I mean, the letter, it's really long, and I struggle to read, but... So apparently he graduated Annapolis High School 4 years after Belichick, threw everything in his van and went down to Marathon Key.
Good for him.
And he said, I was very impressed with how much my parents learned in my 2 years away. Like he left because his parents knew nothing.
He also talks about how we have always referenced that the greatest writing in any newspaper is the obituaries.
Right.
Which is
and
true.
He sends this along. He said, this is the obituary of George Wentz Sr., and in the middle of it, it goes that he became a Seabee and served on numerous South Sea islands. On Guam, he met his wife, Fiona Northrup, who he immediately charmed and soon married, crushing competition for the slim Oklahoma redhead on the island of predominantly military men. Years later, while traveling in Tunisia, Rob made the difficult choice of refusing multiple camels in exchange for the redhead.
Yeah, that is it's tough offer to
Very
refuse.
Good to be in
there. And just to clarify the hat, it's from the restaurant
his
son works at in Deal, Maryland. Stop by and try the Rockhold Rockfish. He said it sits on Rockfield Creek or Rockhold Creek and has water access, so you can go by boat.
I don't
know.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. Kayak.
Here is the best letter I got all day, though. This is really something. On last Thursday's show, I enjoyed your discussion of daytime commercials. As it so happens, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage is a nurse practitioner and a partner in Aspera in Fall River, Massachusetts, a company providing cool sculpting treatments. I myself am an attorney. I don't chase ambulances, but sometimes keep a close eye on them. I've said time and time again, how do they do this? What do you mean they take the fat out?
Right.
Where does the fat go? What do you mean it doesn't hurt? How can it not hurt?
And it's supposed to be without surgery, right?
Non-surgery, right. It's
but
some
not,
sort of
like not needle
laser
free.
Stuff. Well, I don't know. Well, anyway, this is what Mark Sal writes.
All right.
Anyway, the technology of cool sculpting was discovered at Harvard by researchers who observed that some children who ate popsicles got dimples in their cheeks. It does work, and it really doesn't hurt. Where does the fat go? It just disappears into space, ending up somewhere near Uranus. But seriously, Kate would love to offer you a free consultation, perhaps right at Chatter. She can evaluate you in the podcast studio
live
on one of the recently
we
remodeled bathrooms.
Right out on
I'm
this
not a pervert.
Table.
I'm getting a cool sculpting consultation. I'm enclosing gift certificates for those on the show who would seem to most need it, and some small gifts for the prize closet. We'll be traveling to Dubai and the Maldives, Luke Russert style, over the next 2 weeks, but look forward to scheduling something when we return. And,
cool
and
sculpting
this is,
business
I don't know
going
what this
well.
Is.
What
is
a trip
what
to the Maldives. Well, this appears to be lip balm.
Okay.
Yes.
We're
this
taking
spearmint
advantage
lip balm,
of this.
And I guess this is for the
littles.
We've
got free consultation and $50 off for me, for Lace, for Bootsy's
cool,
dad, for
cool,
Nigel.
Cool
so
sculpting.
This is, we're going to avail ourselves of this.
I'm sure I need that.
And now, well, you do. And now we begin the show with this news. Don't tell me they lost. Don't tell me they lost at home in game one in overtime.
Overtime.
And I turn to my right to Gary Braun, who was
overtime.
At the game.
Yes.
Let me tell you how I found out at 5 in the morning, because I didn't watch. I mean, when I watched, they were up either 2-0 or 2-1. And I said, okay, they're going to win this game. And then I watched the first hour of Andre the Giant, Bill Simmons' movie, and then I went to bed. It's very good. Okay. But then I went to bed. I get up this morning. I'm about to walk the dog. It's about 5:15. I check the phone. I have a message from my old producer, Dennis Horgan, who is a Caps fan, was going to take his oldest son to the game, come down from New York, go to the game. But he said, and his first sentence was, and I knew that stuff. His first sentence was, I'm glad I didn't go to this one. And I went, oh, my God. And then I went to the Washington Post app because the paper hadn't come yet. It wasn't even 6 in the morning.
You can get the app now.
I can. And they lost. You were there.
I was there. I went with Spike and Ike, who were very excited to be there. Had never been to a Caps playoff game, even though they happen every year here. Not always as
not
many
as
we
many
would
of
like.
Them.
And it was actually, I have to tell you, I was struck by how many there were. I don't think I'm exaggerating to say there were hundreds of empty seats in the 100 level. Now, I don't know if they were people who bought tickets and just didn't come, but I was waiting for them to fill up, and they did not fill up. There were empty seats.
Wow.
And I think I talked to you yesterday. I think it was off the air about how easy it was for me to get my tickets. I'm not sure if that game was even sold out, which would be weird. I'm sure it's reported to be a sellout. But That said, the crowd was phenomenal. The kids in the first period, the Caps get a couple early goals, and they're so excited. This
Can I
incredible.
Just interrupt every yes. once in a while? How many did Ovechkin get?
Ovechkin got none.
Almost no.
one. I'm not many, even how sure. How many assists did Ovechkin get?
I don't think he had any.
Yes,
any
it would be less assist. Than one.
But I'm looking for shots
in the
on
playoffs.
Goal.
He had four shots.
He did have
on
four
goal.
Shots on goal. But there was, and I said to the person sitting next to me at the game, my friend Barb, who came with us as well, and just to clarify, it was not me and my lady friend and my two sons. My,
yeah, sure.
my brother and his daughter were also there. But that he was, and I wasn't watching on TV, so maybe it had a different feel, but I didn't see him with the puck on his stick much at all. I mean, I saw a few shots. Now it's early. It's too early to be choking, but they choked that one away for sure. They took way too many penalties in the third period, gave
it's
up two power
too
play
early
goals
to
late.
Be choking.
What do they do with the goalie?
That's not a
what
good situation.
What do they do? I was mean, the goalie bad? Grubsy? Was Grubsy bad?
He gave up
or
four goals on
Groovy.
What Groovy.
But some of them were on power play. I mean, that's not really
Yeah, they
his
took
fault.
A
Correct.
Terrible penalty in the yeah. third period.
They
put the
multiple,
guy in jeopardy.
They took multiple bad penalties Three. In the third period. But that
one guy tripped somebody behind his own goal. Yes. What are you doing?
Here's the 30 seconds on that game. First period, they go up 2-0, as is often said in hockey as well as soccer, two-goal lead is like the worst lead in sports, right?
So they. I think I'd rather have it than be down 0-2.
They start the second period yes. on the power play because of that game misconduct.
The five-minute major.
Right.
5-minute major. Yeah, guy boards a guy at the end of the first period. The Caps score two power play goals inside of a minute towards the end of the period.
Inside of a minute?
Yeah.
So the two-goal lead is a bit
7
misleading.
Nothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. A bit misleading, but it came at
count.
The end of the first period, so they have all the momentum in the world. They can put the game away ostensibly with a goal early in the second, which would make it 3-0. Columbus successfully kills the penalty, then gets one sort of midway through the period, and Bobrovsky, the Columbus goalie, really sort of settles in. And in the second intermission, the sort of buzz as you're talking to people is like this doesn't feel right.
Oh, no.
We've seen really, this one before.
I'm serious. It was starting to feel like this is one that got away. Of course, Columbus comes out, ties it in the third, ties it at 2-2, but then Smith-Pelly scores and the Caps go up 4-3. Like
game.
Five, and you think,
game.
Right. So they
Not
give.
Exactly.
Of course, the Caps give one up late. Tie it goes to overtime.
What was it like going into the overtime? Big crowd,
well,
excited.
Everyone
the
was.
Red?
Everyone was there to start the overtime. And to start the overtime, you know, they play something on the big screen. Everyone is very engaged. But I'm telling you, a minute into that overtime, you could hear a pin drop. I mean, we were all just waiting for it. It's
really?
Like there was
really?
No doubt in anyone's mind what was coming. It felt like a mid-season game that had an early start, like a 6:30 start on a weekday, and it was 2 minutes into the first period, and no one's there. It was that. Ugh. It was really that quiet.
Well, this concludes our hockey coverage.
And they scored. And my poor, I mean, you know, Tony, we do these things for the kids. I don't need to tell you.
Yeah.
And my poor boys who were so excited and having so much fun.
Well, welcome to what the Caps
that's
yeah,
what
this
I
is
said.
A necessary
like, this
education.
Is, this yeah. was, it could not have been more perfect for what life as a Capitals fan is all about. Caps going to cap.
I
right?
missed the game. Yeah. I mean, I went in for 5 seconds, and as I said, I went to Andre the Giant, and I'd watched the Nats before that, not well enough, because my phone rang in the house, I don't know, about 7:15, and Michael's on the other end. He said, do you really think that was a double? And I didn't realize the game was on, so I went to the game.
They changed it to an error.
Defined double.
The Nats fell behind early. The maddening Gio Gonzalez threw 106 pitches in 5 innings. Not very many of them very good. He was hit 5 hits, 3 walks. It was 2-0 in the first.
He gave up a homer in the first batter.
3-0 in the second. The Nats got 4 hits all night. What I was hoping for was that Nolan Arenado would charge the mound and punch him in the head, and they'd both get out of the game because Nolan Arenado is really good at that.
He pitched great at the end of his start. Okay, he had a very good fifth inning. Now he cannot afford to have that many pitches to start.
Inning.
No, I'm looking ahead. You have to protect the rest of your staff for a 4-game series before you go on the road. But
the only team they beat this year is Atlanta. They don't beat anybody else.
Well, they beat Cincinnati, but
Cincinnati's not even a team. You know, Ryan Zimmerman hitting a hefty 103. Matt Wieters back in the lineup for the first time in a couple of weeks, hitting a hefty 111. Mm. And Trey Turner, and Michael, you believe Trey Turner is the key to the badness.
Well, he's the key right now because we have Adam Eaton who's not able to play. And Trey Turner, since his injury last at the end of the summer last year, really hasn't been able to be much of an offensive threat.
So that was my night. My night is the two teams that played. The Wizards, I didn't even play. They'll lose as soon as they start to play.
My night is I watched the Nats, saw them go down 2-0, thought, okay, I'm over with that. I'm going to turn to the Caps. And I have to tell you, Gary, watching on TV, even though they were up 2-0 at the end of the first period, there were power plays in the first period before the 5-minute one where they did nothing.
They did nothing.
And I got a bad feeling then.
Well, it's only one game. And
it is only one game, but and granted, a couple of those goals were power play goals, but your dude gave up 4 on 27 shots, and now...
Do they go back to Holpe?
I don't think.
Do we expect an announcement? They have 2 days.
Yeah, that is. That would reek of desperation.
The coach ought to be desperate because he'll lose his job if they lose.
Right.
I'm not a hockey guy by any stretch of the imagination, but if you look at the four major sports, the one where the home field has the least advantage is hockey. Time and time and time again in hockey, lower seeded teams win on the road.
Yet every home team won game one.
Except for the Capitals.
Yes.
But I'm saying that if you're the Capitals, you can go to Columbus and win easily. You can win easily. The home ice doesn't mean anything.
Sure, but at what cost? You have another series that goes 6 or 7, and then you get ready for Pittsburgh to lose in 4 after Pittsburgh gets off to this fast start.
Would you rather they don't win?
That problem? But that's a very valid point in terms of making a deep run, because these games add up. I mean, think of like NBA.
Pittsburgh,
it's the same thing.
Go 7.
It's like teams that win the NBA championship don't go 7 games.
No,
I mean, it adds
very
up.
Rarely, very rarely.
I keep looking at Tortorelli in that box and thinking, he's a really good coach.
And fun to have dinner with, I'll bet, but not fun to be around you're working.
Right.
We'll take a break when we come back. Ann Hornaday has a lot of movies for us, right?
That's
right. So we'll have Ann Hornaday because it's Friday. When we return, I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Brooklinen read. I like this. It tells you to talk about the new bedding you discovered, brooklinen.com. I didn't discover it. I'm not Christopher Columbus. And I've got it. You spend a third of your life in your sheets. They make a difference how you sleep. Start getting better sleep with the best sheets, brooklinen.com. They're the best, most comfortable sheets. There's no big markup. You upgrade your nightly routine, help you feel more rested every day. It's very good. It's a very good product. It was founded in April of 2014 by the husband and wife team, the famous Vicky and Rich Fulop. Their philosophy was the most beautiful, comfortable home essentials without crazy prices. No unnecessary markups or fees. Most bedding, and I didn't know this, is marked up as much as 300%. Brooklinen is the fastest growing bedding brand in the world with over 15,000 five-star reviews. They were named the winner of the best online bedding. That's a category I don't vote for. I usually just do best actress and best actor.
Yeah, no, it's
best
another
of
one.
Online bedding by Good Housekeeping. They have versatile colors and patterns you can mix and match to complement any decor. This is luxury bedding underpriced. You have to try these sheets. My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've slept on. Brooklinen.com, and also have come for free. I want to add that, so I'm very happy about that. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for my listeners and people sitting in the podcast studio right now. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code Tony at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all of their sheets and comforters. You know, clothing never offers that. But mattresses and sheets and furniture they offer, you can test it out for a while, and I think that's really good. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use the promo code Tony at brooklinen.com, and let me spell it for you. That is Brooklinen, BROOKLINEN.com. The promo code is Tony. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Rex and Christina, right? Hey there, it's Rex and Christina with Big Stir Records. Thank you so much for your tremendous support with the Spy Genius record.
It's a great song.
We wanted to share our latest release with you. It's Make, a brand new album from Fresno, California legends Blake Jones and the Trike Shop, who are Fresno, California legends, but they haven't gone all the way east yet. Featuring 13 new tracks of the quirky pop confections for which the band is renowned. Included are high-quality MP3s as well as artwork and press for the album. We're happy to provide lossless files. No idea what that is. Or physical CDs. Yeah, physical CDs. The street date for Make on vinyl, CD, and digital download is April 21st. So that's next.
So this is a pre-release hearing that you...
It's called At Every Train Stop.
Yes. I think originally it was called A Naked Man at Every Train Stop.
Right. Anne Hornaday joins us now. Anne has a lot of movies to review. At least, well, four, and then I'm going to quiz her a little bit about Paterno, which I've seen. Let's start with A Quiet Place with Emily Blunt and John Krasinski. Now, I love Emily Blunt. Okay, I'm pretty sure I loved her in The Devil Loves Prada. I'm pretty sure I loved her in that movie that Matt Damon was in as sort of, he was a political candidate. You know, they all wore hats and they disappeared every once in a while.
I know you liked her in that Tom Cruise
movie. The Tom Cruise movie, The Tomorrow, whatever.
Yeah, that
I loved
great.
Her in that. So what movie am I thinking about with Matt Damon and they all wore hats?
Oh, God. Wait a minute. They didn't say there would be a quiz.
I'll get it for you.
All right,
that
anyway.
Doesn't exactly nail it
no,
down.
No, it's good. But she's good. They meet in the bathroom.
It's a Philip K. Dick one.
It's.
Oh, I knew the one you
it's
mean.
It's a good movie.
It was kind of a crazy abstract.
Yes, it was a good movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I really like Emily Blunt, but this is a horror movie. I don't like horror movies because they actually scare me. Some people go to horror movies to be scared. I avoid horror movies because I don't like to be scared. Yeah. So tell me about this movie, and then we'll find out the name of that other movie. Matt Damon.
I'm blank.
Matt Damon and John Slattery's in it.
Oh God! Now I'm not going to be able
We're
to.
We're looking at her.
No, it's the other way.
Filmography, and none of them ring a bell.
All right,
Tony's looking at her filmography. It'll come up. I'll figure it out.
Maybe she wasn't in it, but I thought she was.
This is fascinating radio, isn't it?
I thought it was good. Go ahead. Tell me about this movie.
Well, okay, this movie. All right. You're right. It's a horror movie. It's more, I would say, actually, it's more of a suspense movie. It's not, there are horror elements, so there are definitely jump scares, but it's more of a suspense. And the premise is that Emily Blunt and her real-life husband, John Krasinski, who actually directed the movie, are parents raising kids in upstate New York after the invasion of these weird alien creatures.
Where in upstate? Near Binghamton?
You know what? I'm not saying it's not Binghamton.
The Adjustment Bureau is the name of the movie I'm talking about.
That's exactly what it was.
Okay.
Thank you. God. I can go back to sleep
That's a
now.
Fun movie. That's a fun movie. Yeah.
It's really good. Yeah, that was a good movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is sort of a speculative... So these creatures prey on people, and they're drawn by sound. The only thing, the only sense they have is hearing. And so you have to be super, super quiet so they won't get you.
Well, it's like the quiet car. Nobody likes that.
Why don't you move?
Nobody likes that. Being quiet is like fishing. That's why I don't fish, because you have to be quiet. I'd be eaten by 10 of these things, and I'm out of the movie early. I'm out
it's
early.
Amazing. It's amazing. And like when you're in the movie theater watching this, within 5 minutes, you know, people are usually talking, and they're munching their popcorn.
They're looking
around.
They're
doing this and that. Within 5 minutes, everybody shuts up. I mean, it's like the whole room goes down.
I really want to see this.
It's a great textbook example of how a movie teaches you how to watch it within the first 5 or 10 minutes. It's brilliant. I thought it was a very clever premise, really well executed. You're right about Emily Blunt. I think she's fabulous in everything.
Terrific.
Including this one. She's definitely the center of this movie. And yeah, I think it's a really, like right now, I think we're in a place where we're finding out what makes people go to movies and theaters. And one of the genres is horror. And this is a really clever, well thought out, well conceived twist on that genre. And if it's smart and that, you know, demands that you see it with other people in a theater. And I think it's fantastic.
Okay. So you highly recommend this movie, A Quiet Place.
Highly.
All right.
Yeah.
The next movie is Beirut. It stars John Hamm. It is written by Tony Gilroy, who wrote Michael Clayton, which on my personal list is one of the top 10 movies I've ever seen in my life. And every time I land on it, it doesn't matter where we are in the movie, I go to the end because I really like Michael Clayton.
It's perfect.
What is this movie, Beirut?
Beirut is a script that actually he wrote before Michael Clayton. It's about a diplomat in Lebanon in the 80s. It starts in the 70s and then it kind of jumps to the 80s. But it's about this kind of world-weary guy who gets out of the biz because he's so disaffected, and then they pull him back in. And it was on the shelf for 20 years. Argo was actually, you know, when Argo ended up winning awards
Love
and
making Argo.
Some money.
Love it.
Right? They thought, okay, maybe there's a market for this. And so they brought it, they dusted it off and then brought it back out. And, you know, it's, first of all, let's see, where do I start? Like, it's a very, it's, we're all kind of waiting to see if Jon Hamm actually has the juice for movies in a way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he knows, we know he's a good TV guy. And I really do think this is probably, he was very good in a little tiny movie called Marjorie Prime last year. But this is really, I think, proof of concept. You know, like, he's got it. And the great Rosamund Pike. I mean, speaking of Emily Blunt.
Yes.
I would put Rosamund Pike up there, too. She's never put a foot wrong, ever. I love her and everything she does. And it's just it's one of those sort of taut, mature, smart thrillers. There's no car chases or gratuitous bombs or, you know what I mean? It's one of those movies like Michael Clayton that's made for kind of, I feel like it's made for us. It's made for kind of grown-ups. And so
I want to see this.
Very well done.
I want to see this. That is a...
Do you think you're going to go see it? Do you think you'll see it in the theater?
I'd like to see it in theater, yeah. I like to be around other people, but not too many other people. Like, I like to go to the first show.
Other people.
When there's, like, 20 people. I don't like
limited
to be
other people.
I know what
people.
You mean.
Yeah.
You're like Jackie Gleason in that episode where he's, like, putting all the potato chips and saying he's ready to watch the fight on the TV. You want it near, but not too near. You want to spread it out.
But I like Jon Hamm, though I agree with you that Jon Hamm on the big screen hasn't popped.
He's not George Clooney.
He hasn't popped.
Yeah.
You know, that this is sort of like Jimmy Smits popped on the small screen. Pop on the big screen.
No, but he does a great job in this. And his character reminded me a lot of Paul Newman in The Verdict. You know what I mean? Oh, like that guy.
Love The Verdict.
Right?
He's the prince
he's
of
Better Days.
Blank and Darkness. Little, yeah, right? I loved it. When Paul Newman, now you can't make that movie. Now, there's one scene in that movie you can never make again.
No.
When he punches.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
At the bar. And you, out of nowhere.
And she's like, I had
know,
it coming.
I had it coming.
A great movie, The Verdict.
Oh, my God.
Great movie.
Oh, my God.
Right, there's another movie here called You Were Never Really Here, in which Joaquin Phoenix tracks down missing girls. I have to tell you this. I'm sure he's a wonderful actor, and I liked him as Johnny Cash. But he's at arm's length for me. There's something about him that I don't totally buy in, and I just think he's sort of weird. And I'm not drawn to his movies. How about you?
Well, he only says nice things about you.
Well, I'm not drawn to his movies.
I know what you mean. This is, you know, this is a very interesting movie. It's directed by a woman named Lynn Ramsey, who did a really great adaptation of We Need to Talk About Kevin, which is a fantastic novel.
Yes.
That she really brought her own sensibility to and kind of refashioned as a movie with Tilda Swinton a few years ago. And,
Tilda Swinton in Michael Clayton, when she's sweating.
Oh, my God.
God, that's a great scene. If everybody here, if you haven't seen Michael Clayton, you got to see Michael Clayton. It's really good. Go ahead.
There is nothing. It's Michael Clayton, I keep circling back. It's a perfect movie. It's perfect. Just, anyway. But Lynn Ramsey is a very interesting, she's an artist. And she really does make these thoughts. These are films that are pure films. They're pure sound, pure image, pure acting.
Your phone is cracking. Your phone is losing us. Where are you?
Sorry. Don't mean to. Can you hear me?
Stay right there.
Yep.
Don't move. Go ahead.
It's a very interesting movie. He's very good. In the service of what you just said, is he plays a guy who avenges young girls who've been, you know, sexually trafficked. And I think it's basically an art house version of Taken. To be glib about it.
Okay.
And I didn't buy it. I didn't buy the premise. I'm sick of using girls and sexual violence as a premise to prove the moral elevation of a male character. I hate that.
Put.
Yes.
And it does it in spades, and they can't get around it, and that's my big problem. It's a hackneyed premise, a hackneyed story, but very well done by Lynn Ramsey. And if you're in that Joaquin Phoenix camp, you know, it's a It is a great performance by him, but I get what you're saying.
The post, the sort of hashtag, you know, every movie now has sort of its hashtag slogan to try to. So I wondered, Anne, where you would come down on this when I saw that the hashtag for this movie is hashtag bring the hammer. And like on the poster, he's holding a hammer. I guess that's.
Yeah. Okay. I know. It's
speaking of that, have you ever seen the commercials
I don't like that.
For the Mike Slocum hammer? Where like he's an accident lawyer. And he goes and he looks in the camera sort of off to his left side and he's promising lots of money for you. And he goes, let's ride. And you just go, well, nobody would hire this guy. No. Nobody hires him. All right. Chappaquiddick, which sounds like it's a TV movie. Jason Clarke and Kate Mara. Is Kate Mara related to Rooney Mara?
Yeah.
Are they sisters?
Yes, sisters.
Yeah.
Having lived through Chappaquiddick, you know, having read about it a million times, I have no particular juice for this, but I'm wondering, is it any good?
You know what? I have to say, I didn't have juice for it either, and I was a little skeptical, but I will say it's very well done. I was very impressed. First of all, Jason Clarke, I thought he was fantastic as Edward Kennedy. And Kate Mara is fantastic as Mary Jo Kopechne, and one of the things this movie does is really humanize her and kind of give her due. You know, I feel like the tabloid headlines, it was all about the innuendo and what was she doing, and, you know, like...
The boiler room girls.
And I think this really kind of shows us how smart those boiler girls were. You know, it was really...
Well, one of them was Esther Neuber.
That's right.
Who went on to a spectacular career in books.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And so I think it does a respectful job of that. It doesn't cast any aspersions on them or what they were doing there. It was, they were there for a party to honor the memory of their mentor, Bobby Kennedy, and that's all it is. I mean, there's no... I was impressed with that. You know, it doesn't go too far out on a limb. It is speculative. It does fill in, you know, its version of what happened, and it doesn't show Mr. Kennedy in a good... You know, it basically shows him as a moral coward.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, his story was always that he had a concussion. He was in shock, and he didn't know what he was doing. But, you know, there is still that huge problem of why didn't you call the police, you know, in that first 8 or 10 hours. And it really shows him and his handlers and his team going into self-protection mode. I won't go as far to say that it demonizes him. It shows him as a flawed human who made grievously wrong calls. But I think it does a pretty judicious job of just showing somebody in that position who does make a wrong call and then where it leads them. And so, actually, for all of that, I think it's very well done.
I'll wait for that to be on TV. I mean, okay. I will not go to the theater.
I want to see it.
I will not go to theater.
I'll let you do. Yeah, I think, Jeannie, check it out and let's talk.
Yeah, I like revisiting those things.
So in this same genre, because Ted Kennedy and Mary Jo Kopechne are real people, and that's important historically, Joe Paterno is a real person. And we've learned the other day when we had Barry Levinson on that the reason he got involved was that Al Pacino's a big football fan and wanted to make this movie. You have seen this, right? You've seen Paterno?
Yes.
What do you make of it?
Yes, I did. I watched it.
What do you make of it?
I thought it was really... I thought it was really good. You know, I think the trick with that movie was perspective and point of view. And I really think they got the point of view right because they went into the household of the Paternos and then they kept pulling back to those fans and to the swirl and the reporter and her point of view outside. And I think what I really appreciated was it kept coming back to the victims and it made their experience and their truth centered. And I thought that was hugely important and really gracefully done in the movie.
What did you think of Al Pacino's performance as Paterno?
You know, I thought it was good. I don't really know much about him, so I can't really say, like, what did you think? More importantly, what did you think?
I felt that early in the movie it was established that he played him as sort of doddering and very, very old.
Yes.
And he was old, but I never thought he was doddering.
Yeah,
I mean, he
yeah.
was coaching, you know, he was still coaching and coaching effectively. Yeah. So
visually,
just because you're 84 doesn't mean that everybody 84 is doddering.
Clueless, right.
So
exactly.
Visually, though,
it was...
He looks just like him.
He looks a lot like Joe.
He really looks like him.
I kept looking at him, though, and thinking of him playing Phil Spector. I can't get that image out of my head.
I know.
Yeah, he played... Well, Al Pacino lately has done a lot of these sorts of movies.
Yeah, did.
So what I wanted to bring up, so we have Barry Levinson on, and Barry Levinson is pitched to us as Barry Levinson's a big fan of Tony's. And I go, this is ridiculous. No, he's not. No, he's not. The fact is he's not. Somebody doing publicity just said, why don't you do this show? And we'll just tell him you're... He had no idea who I was. But after we got through with the Paterno stuff, which I thought was okay, but not great, I asked him, I said, do you mind if we talk about some other movies? So the greatest thing in this was, of course, if you're looking for perfect comedies, Diner is just great.
Yes.
It's of just, course, it's a game changer.
It's just great. And he said nobody at the studio liked it at all. They didn't change a thing because they thought it was so bad. They just wanted to get rid of it. How do those people have jobs, Ann? That movie's great.
Listen, I'll tell you, that was a movie that was saved by critics. It was Michael Strago, my dear beloved colleague, was one of the great champions of that movie. And it was real.
Oh, there goes your phone.
Uh-oh.
Man, they really want to suppress this Diner thing.
Yeah. And your phone is gone.
Oh, she's
back. You're back.
Yeah, you're back.
Go again. Go again. Just sit still and talk. Go ahead.
I'm not moving. I'm not doing anything.
Okay, so Michael Strago. Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, my great colleague was one of the critics who really championed it and helped give it a life. But you're right that it was dead in the water for a while there.
He talked about the fact that Paul Reiser didn't even audition. He came with a friend.
He was going to go see a movie with him after the audition.
And he gave him the part.
Amazing?
So, I mean, look
and
what
it
he...
has that. And you can tell it has that kind of loosey-goosey, you know, I mean, that's the secret sauce.
Well, he did that. He did Tin Man. He did Avalon. He did Rain Man. He did Wag the Dog. He did The Natural.
Yeah.
Meaning, you know, I would have been so thrilled if he was a fan of mine, but if he saw me on the street, he would have no idea who I am. I'm glad we had him on.
That's crazy. Well, he is now if he wasn't then.
That's very good. All right, thanks, Ian.
By the way, one final movie that Ann did not get to see that I got to see.
We're not doing it. The giant gorilla movie.
You always wondered if a giant gorilla, what would happen if it fought a giant wolf and a giant alligator?
I think it would win.
All goes on in Rampage this weekend.
Rampage.
There you go.
All right, thank you, Ann.
Thank you all. Have a great weekend.
Ann Hornaday, boys and girls. We will take a break. When we return, Nigel will do the news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the First Leaf ad, and this is very exciting because the wine tyrant of Tunlaw.
Tonight's the night.
Yeah, tonight's the night. The unopened box of wine, she gets to pick through it and make decisions, right?
She gets to hand out.
Yeah, who gets wine and who goes home empty? She gets to do that.
It's better be nice to her.
I will be. It's the only wine club tailored to you. The more wine you taste and rate, the key ingredient rate, which we have not done, the better they customize your box based on the wines you like. You get an introductory 3-pack of wine at just $5 a bottle. These usually go for $20 a piece. You get them for $5 each. When we come to buying wine, most of our choices are made out of habit. We don't remember how we found our favorites. We just know that when we're at the checkout, those same brands and bottles are in our carts week after week. First Leaf is a new online wine club that's putting a stop to boring wine buying. First Leaf makes tasting and rating great new wines an exciting event. So I confessed the other day, and will confess again, that I get these wines, and I open these wines, and I drink them, and I don't rate them. So I can't make any progress.
So if you have one that you particularly like, you just enjoy it and away it goes?
Yeah,
you
go, just I don't this. Like, I just don't like.
You hold the bottle up and you yell Wi-Fi.
That's what I do, or representative.
How confident are you that you could knowledgeably rate a wine anyway?
Zero.
Well, he knows what he likes.
Zero to ten.
But you exactly. like what you
zero.
Like.
I like exactly. red. Yeah. Their experts are constantly exploring new wines for me to taste and rate, which they do, but I don't rate them. You get the introductory pack. You get all three bottles of wine, $5 each. They normally go for 20, if not more. When my bottles arrived, it wants me to say I tasted and rated them online. No.
Not exactly.
No. I tasted them, not online, in my house, and I didn't rate them at all. First Leaf took those ratings and selected new wines for me that were based on my taste, and they didn't, right, Michael? They just send me their
guesses. Again, this is our big shortcoming.
Yes, they're
and
guessing.
The longer we go with this, there's... greater chance that there could be more misses, which is why we're going to start rating this weekend.
Especially with the wine tyrant, because we'll open up three or four different bottles.
Right.
We're going to have we're having seven for dinner tonight. Is Kate coming?
She is not, but with Bootsy,
he's
a big drinker.
Yeah, we'll have Bootsy drink the wine.
So anyway,
with First Leaf, you never have to worry
rating.
About spending money on a bad bottle of wine. They'll guarantee you love the wine, or they give you your money back. Try First Leaf Club today, where buying great wine is simple. To get your 3-pack of introductory wine for only $15, go to tryfirstleaf.com/Tony. three wines, $15 total on your first order at tryfirstleaf.com/Tony. Experience First Leaf today at tryfirstleaf.com/Tony.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Jeremy Essig, who writes, last June, you were kind enough to play a track from one of my bands on the podcast. In addition to the ego boost it provided, I also received a number of texts from friends I hadn't heard from in years, many of whom I had no idea were Littles themselves. So rather than answer those texts individually, here's a song from my band, Let's Not, a St. Louis-based three-piece featuring myself and my friends Anne and Michaela. Our debut album, Glimmer, is available wherever you find music online, and if you find these songs pod-worthy, it will allow me to respond to those texts from a year ago. Yes? Really? Hey, Coulter and Ryan, how's the kid? Oh, and while I'm catching up with people, please have Mr. Saliza say hello to his CNN colleague, Rebecca Berg, for me. We both worked in the Missouri State House together while in college. She has gone on to a great career in journalism, and I guess I learned how to write a counter melody for a violin. This is called Liz.
That's right.
There are a lot of Liz's near and dear to me, so yes. This makes me very happy. As with Michael, there are Liz's near and dear to him. If people like Jeremy Essig want to send in their music, how do they do it?
Please send your music into the show by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And are we selling anything?
Yes, it's now officially spring. The warm weather looks like it's here to stay, yes. So it's the perfect time to get your very own TK Show knit winter hat.
Yes, it's a good time.
Yeah.
Discounted. Not really discounted.
Yeah.
And in the studio, in this area, in Chatter, we're selling for just $12.
Just 12?
Just 12 Chatter t-shirts that now come in all sizes, not just small.
We are awash in Chatter t-shirts.
Yeah. So they won't be here long, though. Those things move.
They actually move. Nigel has news.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. I wasn't sure. Did you guys cover the Capitals? You know, they lost last night.
Yes, we covered them.
There's a lot of things we could begin with, but let's begin with James Comey.
Yes.
His new book is coming out, I guess it's coming out.
It's out.
Yes. It's leaked out. It's deliberately leaked because he's a leaker.
He's a leaker.
Yeah. And it just details all the conversations he had with Donald Trump, the back and forths, talking about...
What are the two or three greatest things he says about Trump?
Well, the one where he says, we wanted to know about the dossier... that said he was with prostitutes in Russia. And he says, do I look like the kind of guy that would have prostitutes? And this is an actual conversation.
Never would occur to me.
I think, do I look like the kind of guy that would need prostitutes?
Oh, need a prostitute. I'm sorry.
I think is what I heard, yeah. Right?
And then, I don't know, the other one that strode to me was about that incident. He just kept claiming...
He called him a liar. He says he's unfit to be the president. He called him a liar.
Yeah, but he said, I'm a germaphobe. I could never do that.
Oh, Trump said that. Yeah. About the P tape thing.
Yeah. I'm a germaphobe. Believe me, I would never do that.
Yeah.
In the back and forth. I mean, in the end, he says, this is the forest fire that is the Trump presidency.
Yeah.
What's happening now is not normal. It is not fake news. It is not okay.
And how has Trump come back?
Trump has responded this morning on Twitter, of course. James Comey is a proven leaker and liar. Virtually everyone in Washington thought he should be fired for the terrible job he did until he was, in fact, fired. He leaked classified information for which he should be prosecuted. He lied to Congress under oath. He is a weak and untruthful slime ball.
This is right out of Hill Street Blues.
Hang on, it gets better.
Did he call him dog breath?
As time has proven, a terrible director of the FBI. His handling of the crooked Hillary case and the events surrounding it will go down as one of the worst botched jobs of history. It was my great honor to fire James Comey.
I don't know.
Leaf blower alert.
Yeah. I think that James Comey probably did a very, very good job. That's my guess. But personally, I'm not... What is that? Who's calling?
That's Siri's talking to Nigel.
Yeah, don't know why my phone
reminding him to
like
reset
I
the board.
There's a little too much purity. There's a little too much, look at me. It's so hard to be me. I'm the only one in the world who was held to these standards by myself.
And if he hadn't given that first press conference long, long ago about Hillary.
Yeah.
None of this really would have. I mean, that's that was his fatal flaw to me when he put himself in the spotlight.
Now,
then.
if I was doing a celebrity basketball game, I'd want
him. Oh yeah, you can dunk both hands.
I think he can still
probably.
Dunk.
Him and
six,
Arnie
eight.
Duncan.
You yeah, well, Arnie Duncan was a pro. Yeah, you know. But I, you know, all right. What else?
Well, I mean, and this,
I'm just going to go on for weeks. Don't
this
worry
is
about
the
it.
Note that sort of just really annoys me. And I'm not saying that, that Trump is a great guy, but Comey writes, as he extended his hand, I made a mental note to check its size. It was smaller than mine, but did not seem unusually so.
That is cheap.
I mean,
that's a cheap shot.
That is a cheap shot.
That's really
but
funny.
A cheap shot.
But very funny.
Yeah.
To the association, I know you're excited about things going on before the playoffs. A couple of coaches will not be moving on.
Yeah.
Jeff Hornacek fired by the Knicks.
The Knicks want Jay Wright. Jay Wright has to be stupid to take the job.
Why would he leave?
The Knicks should go after either Mark Jackson or Doc Rivers. That's who should coach the Knicks for the next 2 to 4 years.
And after two seasons, Frank Vogel out with the Orlando Magic.
You know, he was a good coach in Indiana. The talent is the determinant.
Yes.
Do you have talent? If you don't have enough talent, you're not going to win. Now, maybe there are people out there like Brad Stevens who can win without a lot of talent because they're that good. Most people aren't that good.
Do you think Brad Stevens can steal the first series?
No.
Yeah. No. But they're playing Milwaukee, right?
Correct.
The difference is...
it's Miami.
The
actually.
Difference is... Yeah. This.
Correct.
There's really... It's not Miami.
Puppet.
The difference is clearly this. You can... If you're a really good coach on a Wednesday night, you can win that game. You're not going to win 4 out of 7 when you play the same team all the time. You're not going to beat them. You're not. Go ahead.
It is Milwaukee.
Yes,
you were right. You were right, Gary. The U.S. Open, not the golf U.S. Open, the tennis U.S. Open, is going to institute a 25-second serve clock on all of its courts during the main draw matches this year and to enforce time limits between points. And they will also restrict...
25 seconds.
25 seconds.
But they haven't announced what the penalties are or when they will be applied.
Oh, I thought I read here that there'll be a warning if they exceed it the first time, and then it'll be a point, and then it will be a game.
Boom.
Oh, is that right? Because in the story I read, they weren't sure about that. Okay.
It says,
do we like that idea?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's move things along, people.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that.
You know.
They're also going to limit the pre-match time.
Let's move it along and go to the gym.
Yeah, 7 minutes.
Take your pictures, go to the gym.
Yeah. Exactly.
Move it along.
Limit mound visits, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, by the way, on that note, are you okay with the way that baseball, the first couple of weeks here of baseball, are you okay with the changes that they've had so far?
I haven't paid attention to any of the changes because I'm watching the team that I like.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't care.
Cal Ripken, apparently, is moving
on. Do you want
on.
That house, Gene?
Yeah, the swimming pool looked fabulous.
It's really a big house.
It's a big house. Now it's a little too much for me to handle, except for the swimming pool.
It's an auction item now.
Yes.
He started out trying to sell it at about $12
million. 12.5, yeah.
Dropped it to $9 million. Now he's taking best bid.
Ooh.
Yeah, no minimum.
I'm going in there for $150.
Right.
You
never
see
know.
How I do.
You might be the only one who shows up.
I could be the leader right there.
Try an even trade with Chatter.
I don't want the house. You want the house.
I don't really want the house.
It's
just
too
look
big.
At the utility bill.
It's so
alone.
Big.
It's 25.
So big.
25
he's
acres
got his
land.
Own basketball court. Timmy plays. Timmy played with him many, many times.
He has a 21-31 stone.
Yeah, the team gave him in 1995. Also has a full-size baseball field, which I know you really like.
You know.
An indoor gym, with a basketball court, personalized locker room, and that huge 2,000-pound rock that says 21-31.
You buy RG3s for a fraction of the price. It's in Creighton Farms.
Right.
Nice course.
I don't want that either. I don't want a giant house.
I guess Cal's...
I can't even go upstairs anymore. I'm so old. I can't do it.
Well, you know, the
You'd
great thing about...
You'd have to put me in the turret... And I would just stay there for the rest of
this
time.
This aerial shot I'm looking at of Cal's house, it looks like a small like
country
state, you know, like
and
a homestead,
like a country club.
Yeah, like a small country.
And Michael, won't you just
why do people club. Want these things? Why do they build these things? Ozymandias, why do they do this?
Yes.
Why?
And Michael, weren't you just mentioning to me the other day that it's just one floor residences at
single
Ingleside?
Store living?
Yeah.
Oh, and Ingleside is expanding. Yeah.
You love pianos, don't you?
I do love
batting
pianos.
Cage, nice gym,
weight room, milk bar,
batting cage,
exactly.
batting
Constant
cage.
Naps. Yeah.
So great.
This is a fantastic story. You brought my attention to this morning. The Chagall painting that was stolen decades ago, right, has just been recovered.
There are ties to the Bulgarian mob. Yes. I didn't know there was a Bulgarian mob.
So to set the story, there was an inside job from a Manhattan place in the Sutton Place.
Always
neighborhood.
Sutton Place with art. Yes. Always an inside job
with Mr. and Mrs. E.S. Heller.
Have you seen the Thomas Crown Affair?
Oh, yes.
Both Thomas Crown.
Both, yeah, Rene Russo.
Both
and Pierce
great.
Steve McQueen, right? The first one?
Both great.
Yes. Yeah, fantastic.
The first one is Faye Dunaway and Steve McQueen. Mm-hmm. The second one is Rene Russo and Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan.
And I hate remakes. Both are great.
One of the rare times the remake is actually terrific.
Both great.
So an inside bloke stole this apparently.
Decades ago.
And the people are dead.
Stole about 25 works of art.
And the people are dead.
Apartment. Yeah.
One of 14 works stolen in the 1988 heist. It's a 13-by-16-inch painting that we're talking about. It's somebody in Desdemona. I'm sorry.
Othello.
Othello
and Desdemona.
Yeah. Othello and Desdemona, which was worth about $100,000 when it was stolen. Now they suspect it will be worth several hundred thousand dollars.
Sure. It's Mark Chagall. He's not painting anymore.
But so the heist was a good move for its value.
But most of what he did, most of what he's really famous for are giant windows. And this is a tiny little thing.
Are you a fan of Mr. Chagall?
Yes. He was an early modernist. But they also stole Modigliani drawing, which I love Modigliani. So I would be happy to see that.
Would you buy it if you had the chance, or would you have stolen it if you had the chance?
No.
This is what I don't understand about stolen art. Like, you can't really move it, right? So it's stolen, it just goes in someone's collection.
Somebody tried to sell it.
Well, apparently there was a rift between the thief and the middleman. They had some sort of association.
Again, the Bulgarian mob.
Yeah, and the Bulgarian mob was somehow involved.
Is anybody here from the Bulgarian mob that would give us expertise?
No, but weren't those the guys in Taken?
The Bulgarian mob.
They were pretty badass.
But see, people like to stolen art.
They'll sell it to
somebody who will just put it on his wall and brag about it, and the public will never know where it is.
Except it stayed in the property of the guy tried to sell it when it said it was the property of the Hellers. Is that the Hellers?
You probably want to remove that before you try and sell it. But there was some dispute about the fee that the middleman was going to get. So
we have pictures, for example, in the bathrooms.
Yes.
You know, we'd hate to see them stolen.
Well, it's art.
That is art. We'd hate to see them stolen.
Yes, no. And by the way, the wonderful waterless urinals.
They are great, aren't they?
Really, still haven't figured that out.
Yeah, nor have I. And then one final story. Because it is Friday, we will take you to Florida I'm not even sure where this is. Dufuniac Springs? Somebody want to look that up?
Dufuniac? I don't know.
Florida man was arrested this weekend after fleeing a traffic stop, then later coming back to taunt officers and do donuts on his four-wheeler. Aaron Clark was charged with fleeing and attempting to elude and reckless driving after he ran away from a traffic stop. He was stopped along with two other four-wheelers. While the other two-wheelers stopped, Clark just said, well, I'm going to run away.
Yeah.
Later that night, he returned to the traffic stop with a beer in his hand, yelling at the police, come and get me, to the deputies before riding off again. They tried to catch up to him, but they were unable to, as they could see him off in the distance, holding a beer can in his hand and yelling. When they later went to arrest, they were able to determine who it was. They went to his house to arrest him. He said he had no memory of the incident because he was, in fact, very intoxicated.
Go figure.
Yeah.
Did the cops eat the donuts?
He was throwing
donuts at them?
No, doing donuts.
Oh, doing donuts.
Dufuniac Springs Panhandle. Looks like just a little northwest of Panama City.
So in the really high-rent district of Florida, right?
Yeah, that's where
it's the Redneck Riviera. Isn't that what it's called?
Right.
Like as it stretches out in Mississippi.
This is a little bit
and
more
lower Alabama.
Maybe
LA.
20, 30 miles north of the Gulf Coast there.
All right, that was
the Emerald Coast.
Very good newscast. We will come back. We will have Old Guy Radio when we return. I think Michael and I will tell some golf stories when we return, in case anybody wants to leave before we do that. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Dancing in the Dark. We're playing it because Liz Clark isn't here.
No.
Because she hates it. We're playing it in honor of Max Weinberg's 67th birthday today. This is a drum-driven song by Bruce Springsteen. And I actually like it. I don't have any particular commentary here, except Max Weinberg's had a great career. Not just with Bruce Springsteen. Wasn't he on with... Was it Conan O'Brien he was on with, or was it somebody?
I would have to check that.
It's with Conan.
I think you're right. Conan,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, house band. Right. He was the house band for Conan O'Brien.
I'm with Liz on this.
You don't like this one?
No.
I love this song.
Yeah, I like this song.
I do, I love it.
And of course, I mean, for critical commentary, this is the song that was made famous because of the video in which Brian De Palma shot the video, and they pull Courtney Cox out of this out of the seats, and then she's dancing on the stage with him.
I've never seen that.
An unknown Courtney Cox.
I've never seen
it. No, it launched Courtney Cox.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is that right? She got Friends after that.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was in 1984 that they shot it, and they actually Bruce had to play it twice within that concert so that De Palma could get the shots right. So,
I really like it. I guess I'm the only one. I really like it. So it's the end of the week. I haven't talked about golf in South Carolina, and I haven't talked about
the train ride.
Golf in Pinehurst, and I haven't talked about. I'll talk about the train ride after I leave Pinehurst because I leave by the train. Would you like to talk about golf in South Carolina, where I was not that bad?
You weren't very good.
No, but I was not that bad.
Is there a specific round you'd like me to go into?
No, I was not very good.
You were terrible.
Oh. Well, I got much worse in Pinehurst.
You were putting well, though. You're actually putting better than I think I've ever seen you putt before.
But I can't hit the ball.
You're not hitting it in the air.
I don't
hit it. And you still struggle out of the traps.
I can't get out of trap. And I can't. I'm really no good, and I have no distance, and I'm no good. And this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to play tomorrow.
Not that bad.
I'm going to play tomorrow. Yeah.
So you know, you played well.
I'm going to try very hard to commit to this one idea, which is when I'm on the range, I'm good. Everybody's good on the range. But I'm also good on the range. And I take full swings, and I try to hit the ball. And when I get on the golf course, I take these little half swings.
Get scared.
I don't turn.
Commit to it.
I'm much too quick, and I
don't
either
activate
shank
the glutes.
I don't do anything. So I'm going to try very hard, even if I'm terrible, truly terrible. I'm going to try hard to commit to a real swing. Like, Michael, you swing at the ball.
Oh, yeah.
Swing at the ball. And the other thing that you need to do when you're on the range is you need to visualize hazards as if you're actually on the golf course. So even if you're just aiming at a pin that's 150 yards away, imagine that it's tree-lined down the left side so you can't go left of that pin because that's going to help you when you get on the course.
Just want to hit it in the air.
And if I can make a suggestion that might help you too, just in terms of,
just quit.
Of that of more complete swing would help in terms of flexibility and stuff, is you should try yoga.
I hate yoga. So we got back from Augusta, and we played five or six holes. I lost five balls very quickly.
So that was a day. You got
that
up,
was
drove to Augusta,
yeah,
did Augusta, day. Drove back, and played.
So wow. That was
now,
good.
What was different Old for me field. Is I play with Dad probably 20, 25 times a year. I play with my in-laws. I might play with my mother-in-law the most of any of my playing partners. And getting the three of you together, it sort of threw me off my game because I didn't know where
that.
To put my attention.
World's colliding.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. We had great fun. So then I went to Pinehurst. I drove to Pinehurst on Tuesday in my Dodge. My red Dodge with Alabama plates.
So not you.
Yeah. I drove to Pinehurst, and I got there in time to play 18 holes Tuesday. I played number two on Tuesday, which is the championship course, mm-hmm. which is where they have the U.S. Open, where they've had Ryder Cup. This is a very big deal course. I played with Alex Podlogar, and I played with Kevin and Alan, who are course designers, who are themselves in charge of the maintenance of the courses and the design of the courses. You know, and they are both agronomists, and one is from England, Alan's from England. It was great fun to play with them, and they're good. I mean, everybody's good to me, but all three of these people were good. I played number two four different times, 4 days in a row. I didn't only not break 100. I don't think I broke 110.
No.
Oh.
No. Well, this is when you get in the sand.
You can't get out of the sand. And all of these, the famous thing people remember is these are the turtleback greens. So you chip it across a couple times.
It just you land, it goes, and you cannot stop it. A great golfer looks at Pinehurst number two and is not scared at all. Looks at the green parts and hits it to the green parts. A bad golfer like me is all over the map, and once you get in the sand, it's very hard to get out. I played 18 that day and had a great time. Then Carl Ravitch and his brother Matt came. So it's me, Carl Ravitch, Matt Ravitch, and Norby Williamson. And we have played together a lot, and we play fast. And we don't really like anyone in front of us, and we want to go through everyone, which is hard to do at a resort.
Yeah. The Bobby Abba move.
It's very hard to do at a resort.
Play over people.
Well, on we played Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. We played 45 on Wednesday.
Oh,
holy cow.
45. Now, we're in carts, except for the 18. We started out on number two. We walked, and then we played, what would the next thing be?
Yeah, probably four?
We played eight. We played eight, and we stayed at eight Or maybe we started at 7 and it was too slow for us, so we ran to 8. And we just kept playing. I mean, Ravitch and Norby are good. And Matt was surprisingly better than I ever remembered him being. And we just kept playing. And Carl, at the end, it was still light. And Carl said, let's go to 50. And I went, no, I'm done. I'm done at 45 for the day.
That's impressive.
We went in 3 days, 45, 36, 36.
Wow.
That's a lot. I'm done. I'm golfed out. I played 100 holes. I maybe had 3 pars. I was so terrible. Just so unbelievably terrible and angry all the time because we'd be behind people who were slow, or we felt they were slow. We felt that we should have badges that would just allow us to go through.
American television.
You
American
know, just
television.
Way,
do you know who I am? Armband.
Because we're not, we're just trying to play. We go to the ball and hit the ball. We don't, are you away? No, maybe you're away. How far might just hit it. Just hit it.
Did any of the people in front of you, did you hear the phrase, nice shot, mom?
No, I didn't hear nice shot,
so how
mom.
The body hold up? 45, yeah, 36, 37.
I was okay.
Do you think?
But we're in carts most of the time. You walk too, but
still
you,
swinging
you think
a lot.
If you had slowed down, you might have played better?
I was,
concentrated
no, I was.
A little more
as
on
you
your...
just heard from my son, you're a terrible golfer.
Well, I just remembered my favorite, piece of your Pinehurst trip happened in the first 5 minutes of when you were at the resort. You're on the phone with me as you're walking into your condo, and I hear you say, I'm here, and the gentleman at the other side of the door says...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought I was staying... We were in, like, 102, and I went to where 102 had always been in the years we'd been there, and I opened the door, and there's a guy who's not only living there, he owns it. And I go, what? What is this? So we ended up in another place. So then I take the train home, because Tina says to me, you're too old to drive. It's like a 6-hour drive. You're too old. Don't drive. Don't drive. Take the train. The train, the Silver Star.
You can play golf, 45 holes of golf in a day.
Well, I was in a cart for most
6 hours.
I had a great time. I always had a great time.
Were you in a golf when you were hitting the ball?
Huh?
Were you? You keep citing the cart. Were you in a
no,
cart
yeah,
when you were
out.
Hitting the ball?
I got out to hit it.
All right.
And then just sit back.
Polo.
Yeah. And we always go to the tavern to eat, and I always have the pork chop. And yep, we always go to Ironwood.
Was there a fire pit?
No. So the train is supposed to pick me up at 6:52 in the morning. That's the train. 6:52 in the morning.
Train pick you up.
Pick you up.
No.
But
I mean,
you're at the station.
No.
Right?
I get on the train at 6:52 in the morning.
It's not coming.
6:52 in the morning, and it gets in at 2:36 into Union Station in Washington, D.C. What's that, 7.5 hours? Something like that? Anyway, I'm going to be picked up by the car service at about 6 in the morning.
Okay.
But the car service at 5:30, because I've been up since 4.
Of course.
The car service alerts me that the train is going to be late. The train is already running 2 hours late.
Ooh.
So that
where's so it coming from? Florida?
Probably, originally Orlando.
Uh-huh.
So if it's 2 hours late there, how much time are you going to make up? The answer is not much
not
time.
Much. Yeah.
So now I'm looking at 4:30 in my head.
You're thinking I can get another 18 holes?
No, I was done. I mean, I haven't played this week. I don't know that I really want to play tomorrow, but I'm going to try. So I get on. I have a sleeper car, which is really nice. I'm really happy about that. I get to lay down, and it's the Silver Star, and everything is, when I get on the train, everything is okay, and we're moving okay. And you hear every once in a while from the conductor, who likes to call everybody ladies and gents, that we're going to make up some time. And we begin to make up some time, because you can follow this. I was emailing with Nick back and forth from Amtrak, and he's saying, you're making up some time. We got down about an hour 20. Like, he made up about 40 minutes.
Wow.
And one of the great things was in Raleigh. I think it was in Raleigh. The conductor announces it's time for a smoke and stretch break. And the train stops. You get 15 minutes. But they say, remember, you leave the train. The train doesn't leave you. So you better get back on the train when we're ready to go. All of that.
This guy's got some A material.
But
yeah,
we are,
I think he's worked on it.
By the way, how would you like to be Nick from Amtrak, Tony, texting you every 10 minutes?
Yeah. Sounds
have we
Saturday.
Met many time? Have we
I
met
could
many time?
Read you the emails about this.
Great to hear.
You threatened him.
Nick
bet
is
he
sick
is.
Of me.
I
but I was, having a, pretty good time. I was having a pretty good time. But then we were in Southern Virginia, like before Petersburg, and we start going really slowly.
Oh, no.
Really, really slowly. Like slowly, when I'm describing slowly, you see the highway and the cars are past you in a flash. And it feels like you're going 5 miles an hour, honestly. It doesn't feel any more than that. and I'm panicking, and I'm writing. Nick is not even answering me. Of course he's not responding.
No, he's
and finally, the conductor comes on. He says, yeah, we've been going very slowly. We had the misfortune. We got behind a CSX freight train, and they go no miles an hour.
Man. Right.
When we finally got rid of the CSX freight train, we were like 2.5 hours late. Oh. We got into what? You know what? I didn't drive. I did get to lay down. A couple of people knocked on the door, take some pictures or something like that. And we got in right around 5, and I had nothing to do. I had nothing to do that Saturday. That was the Saturday we thought it was going to snow Saturday.
Right. Right.
It was
yeah.
too cold to play. I didn't want to play. My clubs were being shipped. I didn't have
some
any.
Were watching the Masters.
Right, but I got home in time to watch, you know, so would I recommend it? If it was on time, yeah. So this is what Nick wrote me. This was the great thing that Nick said, because I said the people at Pinehurst are saying that the train don't take it. And he said, no, let me explain how it works. Some days, it's sort of like Sam Bradford. Some days, he completes 16 out of 18, and he's everything you wanted. Other days, he's a human ace bandage. Yeah. I got human ace bandage. Yeah. What are you going to do? The day before, the train was 2 minutes early, and the day before that, 4 minutes late. I'd have gladly taken those.
Yeah.
The day after, on time. A little over two.
The sleeper car. I've never had that. Is that great?
Woody Allen movies?
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of Cary Grant and Eve Marie Saint.
No, it was
think of anchovies in a tin.
Okay. It's close. It's close quartered, but I had enough room. I did, and I just sort of lay down and I looked at the country, or that part of the country I was in,
the region.
And I would say that
cows.
I only went. I didn't start to go completely crazy till as much as 15 minutes in.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's
after that.
Almost a record.
I had my Discman, which nobody has anymore.
I listened
to my CDs on my Discman. I made some phone calls.
Liz made the mistake of responding to your text. That just opened the door.
Alex Podlegar had gotten me some sandwiches the night before from Pinehurst, so I was able to eat the sandwiches. I was happy about that. I did a lot of counting. I did a lot of fretting when we were slow. I felt we were slow. And as Michael can tell you, when I travel, when I begin to fret, I'm usually right, right? I was right about the plane.
Yes.
So I had plane. What was that thing? Planes and cars and trains?
Planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yeah. I had them all.
You had them all.
I had them all. And each one gave me a certain amount of anxiety.
Terrific.
Each one. So it was really good.
What bothers me about the train story is we flew through Charleston to accommodate you.
Yes.
And to get this rental car, which you just ditched. We then had to fly back through Charleston for our return flight when we could have gone through Savannah, which would have been a much easier trip for us.
I thought you went through Savannah.
No, we had to go back to Charleston.
So are you blaming me?
To return the car, you mean?
Well, I'm blaming you in that it inconvenienced me. I'm also blaming you because when we got that hot red cherry Dodge SUV, which I had to drive, you then slowed us down even further by demanding a Garmin GPS.
I don't know how to get to anything.
Waze?
Do you have a cell phone?
That added about 15 minutes on the back end of the rental car.
You're paying $8.99 a day for a Garmin in your rental car?
It didn't even have...
Love it.
I couldn't
the first
even
half
use
of
my
our
phone.
Drive, it was spitting out kilometers for us.
Yes, kilometers. Oh, yeah. It was a European Garmin.
I was going 85.
I couldn't That's use my phone. Like, it wouldn't sync up with my phone. So I couldn't use my phone because I don't
have airplane mode still.
You know, I didn't understand any. I didn't understand any of it, and I'm probably done doing this. That was probably the last great trip for me.
Well, impressive numbers on the course for you, though.
Yeah,
not the score so much.
five golf balls in six holes.
That's
quantity, not quality.
Yeah,
I'm actually, I was never any good. I have now reached Ingleside levels. I have. They might have to pull me out of the court. All right, I'm done. An email and some emails when we return.
Jingle, an old jingle that has come back, and I hope this is a classic that we've got from the incomparable Robert Berg.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. There's a golfer, 21 years old.
Holding Jordan
Spieth. Looks like he's 40 with his failing follicles. Doing battle with the vertiginous Jason Day, who has a beautiful head of hair. His hat is tailor-made. Dustin Johnson's hairline also heading north. Brandon Gray says, well, what a sad laconic sport. Makes men hate themselves because they can't get it on the green. And 70% of us have the androgen receptor gene. Hitting his golf shots on all the golf holes. Using his golf clubs, he strikes through his golf balls. At the golf tournament, talking to Steve Sands. Signing scorecards with his golf hands. He's won the first two majors. Balding Jordan Spieth. May soon have propitia sponsorships on his golf bag and his golf sleeves. He's ranked first in the world, and hair plugs work for Wayne Rooney. Besides, have you seen Rory's hair? It's like a briar thicket's unholy offspring.
Incomparable Robert.
I think that was Robert's coming out party.
It's a rework. That's a rework. That's very, very good.
It's very good.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Ann Hornaday for coming on the show today. And no, Gary, I'm not thanking you today. I would, however, like to thank our sponsors, Brooklyn and First Leaf Wine. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Huh? It was a beautiful week.
We didn't thank
a week
anybody,
of gratitude.
Including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, leave us a review. I want to thank Alex Podlegar and Pinehurst for letting me play. I always enjoy myself.
Amtrak Nick. How are we now?
Ken Powell at American Airlines. Everybody who helps me travel from A to B.
But not us.
And I drove you.
Yeah. Thank Michael. He drove me.
Dodge.
Chad Bachman, if I were the naked Metro man's attorney, court-appointed public defender, my defense would be that my client entered the Metro station fully clothed and his clothes caught fire by an electrical arcing-type situation. Dr. Tom O'Brien in Rockville, hearing Neil Greenberg speak as the host moaned about his comments about the Cavs-Blue Jackets' upcoming series, I could not help but think of Barry Trotz, the Pittsburgh radio DJ calling Trotzy a whiny, no-neck scumbag who has never gotten out of the second round. He did that on the air?
Wow.
It's terrible. One of the best quotes ever spoken on the show. I also realize his old team made it to the finals last year. It does not look promising. From Jonathan Tannenwald, who we know.
Yes.
In Philadelphia, yes.
That Jonathan Tannenwald.
I usually leave emailing the show to my mother, Carol, but Thursday's show compelled me to write in. I was listening to Neil Greenberg's appearance and the many caveats behind his prediction that the Capitals would beat Columbus. I was surprised that he and not you did not mention that they are choking dogs. So will they be choking dogs again this year? I am, for better or worse, prepared for it to happen. Also, could you give a shout out to my father, Peter, who turned 75 this past Sunday? That would be great. As Michael knows, Peter is a big fan of the Ribs at Chatter. I hope to see you, Michael Bootsy, and Bootsy at the Palestra next season.
Oh, can I just say, speaking of Chatter, this is going to be a perfect weekend to be out on the patio.
Yeah, we're outdoor cooking.
Yeah, putting so up make the sure, umbrella. Yeah.
Friday and Saturday, we are outdoor cooking.
Yes.
And Sunday, David Rowland in Anderson, Indiana. I was heartened by Neil Greenberg's upbeat takes on the Washington sports scene. Especially heartening was how he did not predict that a tomato would wipe out Redskins Park later this year, or that the Nationals roster will not be decimated by anthrax. As an aside, though, Scott Brooks might be cheered up by a robust case of anthrax compared to how you described his current demeanor. Those two non-predictions are the most upbeat things that can be taken from his conversation with you and the gang. Oh, well, hockey and basketball, winter sports. Who wants to spend time during May and June watching winter sports anyway? From Jerry Bauer in O'Fallon, Missouri. Just one question. You have a taser in your hand. There is an angry and violent naked man in front of you. Where are you aiming with your taser? I think we all know where we're aiming. Paul Hahn, the Georgetown prep class of 2002. I just saw CNN's Chris Saliza say golden showers on the air. Next time I see him, I'm screaming La Pizzerie. Not La Cheeserie.
No.
David from Falls Church. I was listening to a podcast with Jason Alexander. He was asked about the TV shows he acted in after Seinfeld. Shockingly, Listen Up was never mentioned. Well, he's driven it from his memory.
Yeah, no Tony Kleinman.
He's driven it from his memory, clearly. Jesse West in Chesapeake, Virginia. Last week, I sent you all the winning pieces from Monopoly, but today they were returned by UPS asking something about a suite number. I guess you'll just have to get rich the old-fashioned way by being on TV and selling Wilbon's chili, if only that were the case. from Josh Cromwell in Moselle, Mississippi. The newest slogan for the Metro has been unveiled: fewer fires, more nudity.
Yeah.
From
Ooh,
Joe
Nguyen,
or Nguyen, N-G-U-Y-E-N.
Nguyen.
Nguyen. Joe Nguyen, excuse me. New York via Amsterdam. Greetings from Amsterdam, where I'm spending the week on holiday. I couldn't help but think of you when we got to the immigration officer on the way out of the airport. When he stopped us and asked where we were staying in the Netherlands, I pulled up the address of our Airbnb from my phone and apologized that I couldn't pronounce the address. Here's a photo of where we're staying. As soon as he read it, he started laughing hysterically. He told us he knew why an American would probably call it Uranus Street Number 2, stamped my passport, and told us to have a great time here. God, I love this country. It's U-R-A-N-U-S-S-T-R-A-A-T. It would seem you would think, Mr. Wynn would think, and anybody would think Uranus Street. There's a picture of it over there that Michael's holding up. Stephen Eckington. Just checked in this morning at Sibley for scheduled arthroscopic surgery. I have a torn labrum. Yeah, fastball's going to be a lot slower this season. Anyway, I had to pay $12 to park. Not a bad deal at all in Northwest D.C., but today's procedure will cost upwards of $20,000. How much do I need to spend to get him to validate my parking? I mean, I think you've probably been able to do that right then, don't you think? If you're out on your bike side, everyone, as always, do wear white.
This book is devastating.
Thanks, everybody.
At every train stop, I'm hoping to hear the song that makes the day worthwhile. At every train stop, all these songs and their dreams, they remembering all our friends back home, matching our cars.
Cigarette, she said.